WMP, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, welcome to Rockin' Finn Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of January 30th and 31st. My, the first month of the year has flown by. Hey, today and tomorrow, final days of the statewide winter bow season. Now, tomorrow the 31st, you can hunt wildlife management areas and private land only. Okay, no state forest, state parks, etc. But today it's open statewide. Now, the coastal zone duck and Canada goose season ends today at sunset. The snow goose season, snow and Ross's geese, that continues through February 15th. Then the conservation order comes in. Applications are being accepted for the spring gobbler season. Okay, it's a $2 non-refundable fee. These are the spring season dates for turkeys. Youth Day is going to be Saturday, April 21st. A week is April 26th to April 30th. B week, May 3rd to May 7th. C week, May 10th to May 14th. D week, May 17th to the 21st. And again, the 24th to the 28th. And E week is all the Saturdays, May 1st, May 8th, May 15th, and May 22nd. So get onto it now. Again, we've seen a good amount of turkeys in my travels, especially around Central Jersey down through Southwest Jersey. A lot of birds around, man. It looks like it's going to be a pretty good year. Last spring, I think they must have had a pretty good hatch rate and success rate, survival rate. Okay, mark your calendars, okay? Now, I know I'm giving us three weeks in advance, but with the COVID thing, who knows if this is even going to come off. I hope it does. On Sunday, February 21st, it's the 27th annual Traditional Archers of New Jersey's Cabin Fever 3D Shoot and Swap Meet. It's going to be at the Black Knights Archery Outdoor Range located at 656 Perrinville Road in Jackson, Ocean County. Registration is going to be 7:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., $20 for adults and $5 for youngsters 13 and younger. Compound bows, recurves, and longbows, no crossbows allowed. Rain date is going to be Sunday, February 28th. For directions and information, go to BlackKnightsBowBenders.com. Black Knights, that's two Ks, BlackKnightsBowBenders.com. Okay, Coastal Zone duck and Canada goose season ends today at sunset. The light goose, you know, the snow and Ross's goose season continues through February 15th. Okay, and then the conservation order comes in. So a lot of stuff still going on out there. Now, again, back to the deer. You have a permit bow. No, I'm saying winter bow, permit shotgun, permit muzzleloader. Still going on through middle to the end of or around February 20th, whatever, in certain DMZs around the state. Go to Fish and Wildlife Digest. Check it out. The dates and all the DMZs are in there. Okay, coming up, Tom Miranda. Yes, author of Master Trappers, best-selling book that is out. Unbelievable. We're going to detail the book itself and Tom's meteoric rise from a humble kid on a trap line to one of the best-known outdoor TV personalities in the business. I mean, what this guy hasn't done, you could probably fit on an index card. So grab that cup, grab that Rebel, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Hey, man, how do you like this cold? I'm sort of liking it. We just need a little bit colder down here, a little longer duration, so maybe we can get some safe ice on some of the back ponds, man. Ice fishing. I miss it. Well, I go to North Jersey, maybe next week, the week after. They have 4, 5, 6, 7 inches of ice on some of the places up there. But I wish we had some safe ice down here in South Jersey, because when we do have it, it's some hot ice action. Hey, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
From High Point to Cape May, Trenton to Toms River, people are seeing the benefits of clean energy. Through New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, they're finding ways to save money and make their homes and businesses more energy efficient, like saving hundreds of dollars with Energy Star appliance rebates or getting an energy assessment for their business. From how to save money to ways to save our planet, we're lighting the way to a clean energy future. Join in at njcleanenergy.com or call 1-866-NJ-SMART, 1-866-NJ-SMART.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM, South Jersey's talk station.
Hey, man, remember last week we had on local Newt Sterling, local celebrity. Tom P, you made my head swell mentioning me and Tom Miranda's book. Oh, my God. Had Mitch Cox on from Furfish Game Magazine. I've been writing him for all listeners over the many years. Mitch is one of the... I can't say he's not, his verve for life is there. He's just not as enthusiastic as I am. One of the finest editors out there. Well, we'd mentioned a book, Master Trappers by Tom Miranda. Tom Miranda honors the master trappers. Illustration artist by Joe Goodman. Hopefully we have Joe on a little later on in the spring. It's 15 chapters, 400 pages. It's packed with photography and illustrations. Now, 12 of those chapters are interspersed with the author's autobiography, from his humble schoolboy trapline beginnings. And we all started, you know, humble with the muskrats, I guess, to his current position as perhaps, and I'm just saying, listen, I know them all, okay, as perhaps the best known and most recognized outdoors television personality and producer, and one of only 8 bow hunters, he's going to correct me if I'm wrong, to complete the Pope and Young Super Slam. Man, this isn't 4 animals. This isn't 10 animals. This isn't 12 animals. This isn't 16 animals. This isn't 20 animals. Tom will get into it. Also, Africa's Big 5 and Dangerous 7. In between, Tom Miranda has written outdoor books and numerous articles on trapping. I don't know how he's doing all this. It was a monthly columnist with Furfish Game and produced dozens of trapping and hunting videos that continue to be bestsellers all throughout North America. And I'm not, if I'm correct, internationally as well. And he's just an incredible guy. He's a very special guest on Rack and Fin Radio. Long time. I've known him vicariously through his articles and videos and TV shows. Well, after a TV show, one of Miranda's hunts, you're like this. I mean, Mary, mother of God, he does it all. Sorry, Tom, I'm too enthused. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, buddy. We got 2 Toms going today.
Miranda, this has to be one of the most exhaustive books I have. I mean, to put this together is just phenomenal. I have to ask you right off the bat, Tom, from its inception to its completion, how long?
I started the book in 2014 for 6 months and put it down. And then about 2016, I picked it up again and tried to continue to write. And then the National Trappers called me in, just before the COVID thing and said that they were going to introduce me into the National Trappers Hall of Fame.
Congratulations.
Wow. Yeah. So anyway, I thought, man, I need to get that trapping book done. And so I got on it, and it took me 4 months during the COVID thing to get the thing cranked out, and we went to print in July. So yeah, it was a great fun experience and a lot of work, and
sure,
you know, but you get out of it what you put into it. And I had been wanting to do it. It was kind of a labor of love in the sense that I wanted to do a tribute to all the people that had helped me along the way to become a better trapper and eventually bow hunter. So, you know, it was more of a tribute piece, and I kind of wove my biography through parts of it because I get a lot of questions about that. And
sure.
I think that was really an opportune time to do that. It turned out good.
Hey, Tom, the way you did that with your autobiography, listeners, it's phenomenal. But, Tom, you cover the fur traders. This was one of the misconceptions I always had. I thought fur trader, fur trapper. No, listeners, this was wrong. The fur traders traded for the skins with, Tom, you said, like metal knives, you know, knives and things like that, correct?
Yep, that's correct. Well, in the early days, you know, the Indians were the ones that the native people were the ones that actually obtained the furs.
Furs, right.
The French traders would go out and barter for them. And that was kind of the beginnings of it all. And eventually there were some entrepreneurial fur men that decided that they would put trappers together and, you know, train people to be trappers and send them out. And those were basically the mountain men.
And I mean, listen, this is how researched this book is. Even, Tommy, went way back, even to the fur traders in early Asia. Where did you dig up this information? I was like, what? My wife says, what? I said, man, I'm telling you, she said, that's the third time you're reading that book. What are you doing?
No, it's, you know, I mean, I have a big library. I collect a lot of books, old books. I enjoy it. I'm not a huge reader, but I do obtain a lot of information on a lot of old stuff. And then when I got time to put the book together, you start kind of figuring out where you can find the information, and you look it up and you write it down and you verify it and you put it in the book. So yeah, and finding pictures, and I had a lot of pictures of the old days myself, which helped, and I knew people that had pictures, and you know, especially from the guys in the early days, and you know, one thing led to another. And I mean, that's the other thing too, besides having a really good manuscript, that having the pictures just really makes it, because there's, you know, there's over 650 pictures in that book.
I know it.
There's a lot of cool things to look at.
Yeah. And listen, check this out. Remember the movie, The Revenant? Leonardo DiCaprio, he despises politics, but damn good actor. And Miranda, if I say so myself, damn good actor. I realize there was some, you know, leeway, some liberties taken with the film. But listen, Kit Carson is covered in here. Jim Bridger, Sewell Newhouse and Johnson. Let's go into, remember the movie 1972 with Robert Redford? Jeremiah Johnson. Well, Tom, wasn't it actually, he was called Liver Johnson or Liver Eater Johnson or something?
Yep, Liver Eating Johnson, exactly. And that wasn't even his real name. He changed his name because he was being chased by the law. So it was pretty crazy.
And he was, you know, when you, and you look at the Will Gear character, and there's an exceptional illustration there by Joe Goodman of the Will Gear character from the Jeremiah Johnson film. And it just adds to me, Tom, the authenticity. This is really the true trapping history. But I have trapping books, Jerry Blair, et cetera, infinitum, all good, all educational. This, Tom, reads like an encyclopedia, but in a very entertaining and where you can't wait to turn the page format. It's great.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It's nice to put a lot of time and effort into something and then have people appreciate it. And I have gotten literally hundreds of emails and letters and just telephone calls from people who know me that have got the book that just really feel the same way you do, that they just really, it's something that would be very hard pressed to replace in the future. It's just, it's all there. So okay. Really proud of it.
Joining us on the Rack and Fin line is Tom Miranda, author of Master Trappers. Tom Miranda honors the Master Trappers. Man, people, listen, illustrated history of trapping in North America, the opening up of the continent. Now, Tom, you started trapping when you were, what, 10, 11 years old, 9 years old? What's the dealio?
Yeah, 11 years old, 1969. My dad took me out, pointed up at the moon in July, and he said, son, you know, there's a man walking on that moon. Of course, it was Neil Armstrong.
Right, yeah.
I was 11 years old. I was 11 years old, and he said, you can do anything you put your mind to. And basically, that's pretty much been my motto for my whole life. Anything that I want to do, I try it. At least try it, you know. And right. I tell everybody that I'm not really good at anything, but I'll outwork anybody. And I think that's the key to being successful, is not being afraid to try things and just right. work hard at it. You know, it's that work ethic that I learned as a trapper.
And Tom, you know, when you come to a point where, okay, this isn't working, for example, listen, not to bring up a bad point, he bought a place in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, 15 miles back on this road. And with some friends, his mom and dad, granddad, whatever, granddad and grandmom built an A-frame, went out there, quit his job. He had a good paying job, Tom, right at a plant your dad was able to get you on board, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And then went and planned and got in his Jeep, loaded it up. His dad said, you know, Tom, I mean, you did say he gave you support, thought you were a little crazy trying to do this. How are you going to pay your bills? You made it. You went out there. And a very humbly, Miranda says, my first trapping season there was not great. No, it was disastrous. And you came back to Ohio, to your roots, and you trapped it and had to pay your bills. You had to do what you had to do, and then expanded further to where you were successful at the Michigan place. So it was a matter of, especially in dealing with trapping, hunting, you know, the outdoors, you have to know when to hold them and when to fold them.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you're a trapper or a hunter, bow hunter, you know, you may think you really know it all when you're in your home area and you do well there, but you go somewhere else, like the wilds of northern Michigan, the animals are a little bit different, the weather's a little bit different, the terrain's a little bit different, and it's the same thing traveling to Africa to hunt or traveling to the Rocky Mountains to hunt if you live in Ohio or somewhere in the east. You know, you've got to really adapt, and I think that's been one of the biggest resume builders for me in my whole career, the fact that I've just traveled to so many places and got a chance to be. You know, if I go to France, I don't go to Paris. I go to the Pyrenees Mountains and Chamois, you know, or the Ibex in Spain. So, you know, you're doing those types of things. You're learning about animals and you're learning about habitat and different things. And same thing with the trapping. And once I got a couple of years in trapping in the Upper Michigan, then I ended up in South Dakota being a government trapper. And that was a totally different scenario, totally different area. Yeah. Well,
Tom, we're up against a hard break. We're going to hang in for another couple of segments. I know where you live, man, so you got to hang in, T. Okay? Okay, let's just grab that cup, grab that rub. We'll be right back with Tom Miranda, man. Rack and Fin Radio. Be right back.
So what is Talk with a Purpose? It's a lively, informative, number one rated talk show on Saturday morning. Hi, this is John DeMasi. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 9 a.m. till noon for Talk with a Purpose, heard right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And if you miss it on Saturday, we replay it on Sunday from 5 until 8 p.m. Don't miss Talk with a Purpose, Saturday and Sunday, right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Shop Acme for everything winter. Stock up on soups, hot beverages, and ingredients for your favorite meals like fresh meat and produce, delicious desserts, and don't forget the firewood. This week, cook up a quick and easy meal the whole family will love with our Signature Farms chicken thighs, drumsticks, or legs. Value packs are only 99 cents per pound. And get 3-pound bags of fresh, juicy clementines for just $3.99 each. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go. Look out below. You're back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of January 30th and 31st. Man, first page of the calendar is Gonski. As of tomorrow, joining us online is Tom Miranda, author, video producer, TV show host, outdoor producer extraordinaire. Tom, I want to make the jump from your trapping to the opportunity to have a TV show. How did that happen?
Well, I originally wanted to do, I was very successful in the trapping side of it because of the trapping videos that I'd started to make.
Right.
And, you know, one thing led to another, but I ended up getting put on a list by animal activists. They wrote a book of the top 10 people that were bad for wildlife, and I was on the list, number 8 or something like that, because of the trapping lessons that I was giving on VHS video. This is back in the mid-80s. And I wanted to try to do something to try to be able to tell people that trapping was good for wildlife, not bad. I mean, it's bad for the one animal you catch that right. day, but with all the other animals, it's not. So I wanted to talk about the conservation message, but I really figured out very quickly that trapping just wasn't going to fly on mainstream television. And I ended up going to see Jimmy Houston at a sports show, and I knew he was on ESPN with a fishing show. And I waited in line for his autograph, and when I got up to the front of the line, I started talking to him for a little bit about it, and I told him that I wanted to do a trapping show, and he goes, whoa, I don't think that's going to work. And he says, do you like to do anything else outside? And I said, well, I really like bow hunting. He goes, there you go. He goes, follow that bow hunting thing. And so that was the beginnings of it. And once I ended up, well, I was on Sports Channel America for a couple of years, and ESPN saw one of my, I kept sending tapes to them, and they saw one of my demo reels and gave me a call. And yeah, I got on ESPN July 4th, 1992.
Wow. Tom, just go back a little bit, what you said with the list from the animal rights freaks, as I call them. I believe Russ Carman, who's big with sense, he wrote a book, The Illusion of Animal Rights, and they were after his ass too.
Oh, yeah. They're after everybody at some point.
Well, Tom, again, getting to ESPN listeners, this is how it works. This is what I try to tell people. Tom, I've had a TV guest on as well, and you'll understand, you go buy some cable time, and it's real easy. It's not the expense involved. Tom, can you go into that? I'm seeing numbers, 250,000. Whoa, two quarters, that's 26. That's 500,000 you have to come up with, boom, before you even realize a profit, correct?
Absolutely. You know, I put a lot of that information in the book, not to really talk so much about the numbers, but just to bring the realistic factor down for people. You know, first thing is, you know, back in those days, ESPN Outdoors was fairly new. It started in like 88.
Right.
And so it was fairly new. And there were only, it started with the Fishing Hole show with Jerry McGinnis.
Jerry McGinnis, God rest his soul.
There was only four or five shows that they were doing on Saturday mornings. But they eventually got to 8 shows, 4 hours, you know, half-hour shows for 4 hours for a block. And so it was very, very difficult for a show to get approved to be on ESPN, and then even harder to get a time slot. When I got my opportunity to get that time slot, it was only for 8 episodes in 1992. But, you know, if you go on there, and the main thing is make good shows and make good ratings, because if you don't have the ratings, they replace you.
Goodbye.
There's a long list of people waiting to get in, absolutely. And the cost, too, is this.
Sure.
You don't really realize. I mean, back in those days, I mean, a TV studio to edit your own shows was $1 million. So $1 million worth of equipment to be able to do it right. Most people couldn't afford that, so they would go to places that edited shows, and they charged $350, $400 an hour to edit a show. You know, so it was, and you had to basically go there really, really prepared and try to only take like 4 or 5 hours to get the show edited. Some shows took 8, 10 hours. I mean, it was expensive business. Absolutely.
So I remember when I was my time of Wood Advertising, we would go to NFL Films because we had a lot of fishing and boating accounts at Triton Boats, Garcia, you know, Berkeley, all that stuff, Fenwick. And again, the studio time. And I'll never forget, Tom, the one time the girl comes around. Hi, what would you like for lunch? I don't know. Give me a tuna on rye. Whatever. And they're, like you said, Miranda, they're getting $3, $4, $4.50 an hour. Don't you know when we got the bill, they charge us for lunch too? Jesus. Ah, man, Steve Sabo, take that, man. Take that. Tom, how did you, again, the expansion now, the traveling, the whitetails, okay, the whitetail shows, and they're all good. Most of them, for that matter, is what I can see. They're like dandelions popping up everywhere. You took it to another level. I mean, with the international travel. I mean, Ibex in Turkey, Ibex in Spain. I mean, go into that. What, you sat down, you brainstormed with who, yourself? Your other cameraman, to get it to that level where it's, except with good company or with Shockey, nobody else is doing that.
Well, I mean, originally I was doing an adventure show. I mean, when I got on ESPN, the show was called Outdoor Adventure Magazine. It was a segment on hunting, a segment on fishing, and a segment on adventure. And the reason that we had such high ratings for the 5+ years we were on doing that show was the fact that I did these adventures. I mean, I was a pilot at the time, so I did a lot of flying. And so I would do a lot of these flying shows. I'd do skydiving. I'd do bungee jumping.
I saw you jump out of an airplane, Miranda. I said, this guy's nuts.
You know, but that was the kit. That was the hook, you know.
Yeah.
So I had had a really high audience to watch that. And that allowed me to do some conservation work as far as, you know, getting my message across that, you know, hunters weren't bad people. And conservation of animals and hunting is good. So, you know, that once I got through my death wish of being an adventure seeker, eventually, well, Bill Jordan came to me and wanted to produce a show for him, and I decided to just change the name of my show to Advantage Adventures. And then I basically dropped all the adventurous type stuff and went straight into just bow hunts and bow hunting. Well, I did some shotgunning stuff, too. We
went
to Argentina and hunt doves or ducks or whatever.
Right, Tom, I was just going to ask you that. Some of your sponsors were on the firearms end of things. How did that wash with you being primarily the bow hunting thing?
Well, I mean, in those years, it was a transition, you know, from the adventure show into the hunting show for Realtree. And, of course, it was Advantage Adventures. So Bill Jordan's Advantage Camouflage was the official pattern of Ducks Unlimited. You know, they were with Pheasants Forever. And so there were a lot of things that were going on that basically meant that I needed to do at least shotgun hunts, if not a few rifle hunts. I mean, I've only shot 3 animals with the rifle, big game animals in my whole life. Everything else has been with archery. So that's what I really enjoy is the bow hunting. And as that show matured, I basically did more and more and more and more bow hunts and eventually all bow hunts. And And I've been doing all bow hunts ever since.
Tom, knocking on the door for sponsorship. Now you've been with what, Matthews Archery? They've been with you for how many years?
Since 2002.
Wow. So that's testament. One, listen to the quality of the broadcast. But again, Tom, knocking on the doors. Is it a matter now you've achieved the level where sponsors come to you, or is it still, hey man, beat the leather and make the calls and knock on doors? What's the dealio?
Well, it's really twofold. I mean, one, you know, I do have the credibility, but it's kind of the Barney Fife scenario. I mean, you know, Don Knotts played Barney Fife, so everybody looks at Don Knotts back in the day and say, well, there's Barney Fife. And it's the same thing for me. Everybody looks at me and thinks Realtree because I've had them as a sponsor since 1989. Everybody looks at me and says Cuddyback Trail Cameras because I had those guys for 14 years.
Wow.
They look at me. And so you kind of get branded by what you do, especially when you're in some of their commercials and you're constantly showing this and showing that. And, you know, my show is brought to you by Realtree, brought to you by Matthews. So eventually when some sponsors drop away and there is attrition, I mean, it's just the way, you know, life is, it's hard to move to another sponsor because, hey, you know, I mean, you know, there's always this, you know, for a lot of TV hunters, especially, or TV people in general, you get branded with this, you know, you're willing to sell your soul for, you know, sponsorship.
Yep.
You're willing
right.
to use any product, whether it works or not. And I've kind of gotten to the point now where, well, I was very successful early on, so it's not. I still do TV shows, and I enjoy doing them, and I have some goals that I want to, you know, finish before I just basically retire from doing TV. But the main thing now is to just try to keep my sponsors, you know, as happy as I can, and only have sponsors that I use their gear, you know. And I think that's, you know, I mean, because I want to use it, and I have used it for a long time. And I mean, some of the sponsorship rates have dropped a lot because a lot of people have been going to the clicks, you know, the Googles and the online streaming and all that type of stuff. And there's been some TV shows that have adapted. The Meat Eater has adapted and gotten, you know, into Netflix and some of the other things that you can do. Whereas I've been, I don't know. I never really was huge on the internet. I never really got into the Facebook thing till a lot later and the Instagram thing till even later.
Sounds like me, Miranda.
A lot of people have way bigger accounts. I mean, I look at Shockey's account, he's got 600,000 or 700,000 Facebook followers or whatever. And I mean, you know, here's my measly 90,000. And we're very close and good friends, you know. And, but at the end of the day, I mean, his kids were into it and they got him into it. And that's kind of what it was. And, you know, I mean, I just never really got into it. But, you know, I kind of wish I would have. And then on the other hand, I'm kind of glad I didn't.
Good for you. Listen, we're speaking with Tom Miranda. Table of contents, I'm just looking at again, The Master Trappers, 15 chapters, 12 of which Tom's autobiographies interspersed. He covers them all. Glass, Bridger, modern day trappers, again, the likes of Newt Sterling, Sewell Newhouse. Guy who the trap. I tell you, Tom, one thing about the trapping in particular, when I was doing it, I got keyed on one particular species, for example, and I lived for that. Now, believe it or not, in Jersey, I was known as Possum Tom P, but that's neither here nor there. But Tommy, I really got keyed on weasels. I was traveling the state. My AMC Rebel or AMC Horn, I forget, it had a reverse gear, listeners, that worked when it wanted to every once in a while to try to trap weasels. I think in 3 years I caught maybe four, five. But again, in your book, you cover the fox trappers, you cover the mink trappers, you cover the coyote trappers, the wolf trappers, the beaver trappers. Nothing short of phenomenal, Tom.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, when you try to cover the whole gamut, you know, it's hard to, a lot of things get left out. I mean, one of the things that I look at the book, I mean, I guess it's like if you built your own house or, you know, you do something yourself, you don't always stand back and look at it and say, wow, that's a great job. You stand back and you go, oh, I remember I nicked that over there and I didn't pound that nail in straight. And you're always looking for your mistakes, you know. And of course, in the book, I mean, when I look at it, I just think of all the trappers that I probably left out that should have been in there, you know, because when people think of the title Master Trappers, they think that, wow, this is the definitive Master Trappers. Mm-hmm. It's the Master Trappers for Tom Miranda. It's my Master Trappers. It's not all the Master Trappers. And so there were quite a few people that could easily have the badge Master Trapper that are Master Trappers that aren't even mentioned in the book. And it's because they just didn't really, they weren't people that I was associated with or people that I clanged to or you know, I got into at the time. Just that book was just about what I was interested in and who influenced myself. So that's kind of the skinny of it. So when I look at it, it's like, oh man, I wish I could have made a 1,000-page book.
Sure.
And probably not got everybody in it.
You got it. Listen, speak with Tom Miranda. Grab that cup again. Grab that Red Bull. If you didn't, man, hang on. We'll be right back with Tom Miranda, Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio, 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's number one talk station.
News until NATO. Johns Hopkins University reports nearly 437,000 COVID deaths in the U.S. so far. That is, Johnson & Johnson says it has a new one-dose vaccine that's 66% effective in preventing COVID. And while that may not sound perfect, the company's Matai Mamman says,
we have 100% protection, complete protection, against hospitalization and death.
The company's asking for emergency use approval in the coming days in the U.S. A special goodbye for a police officer killed during the Capitol Hill riot this month.
Fallen Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick will lie in honor at the Capitol Rotunda. Sicknick died after being hit in the head with a fire extinguisher. He'll be buried at Arlington National Cemetery following a congressional tribute on February 3rd.
Fox's Rick Leventhal. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. Overnight clear and cold, will have less wind, low 17. Saturday, sunny and cold, but not as windy, high 35. Patchy clouds Saturday night, low 21. On Sunday, becoming cloudy, high 34. Snow, sleet, and rain is expected to begin later Sunday, then continue Sunday night into Monday. I'm AccuWeather's Kurt Babinski on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, welcome back to Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of January 30th and 31st. We're going to wrap it up with Tom Miranda, author of Master Trappers. So this section, listeners, this segment, rather, I want to get into Tom's amazing, amazing archery hunting feats. completed the Super Slam. He has Africa's Big Five, and he has the Africa's Big Six. He's missing a crocodile with that one, and that's something else entirely. Tom, going on this pursuit now, years, you're doing the TV show. I get you're doing the writing. You're doing the videos, raising a family out there. What was the catalyst that you said, I want this Super Slam. I want it. I can do it. I can get it. Like you said, it reminds me of George McFly from Back to the Future. Put your mind to it. You can do anything. What got you going?
Absolutely. You can do anything. Put your mind to if you're willing to do the work. What happened for me was in 1994, I had a sponsor on my TV show, Outdoor Adventure Magazine, Hunter Specialties Company, and they're based in Iowa. They made a lot of different knick-knack products for bow hunters and stuff, and they had hired Chuck Adams, who was the first Super Slammer, to be a spokesperson for them. And because they sponsored my show, we did a deal to where I could have Chuck on my show for a few appearances. So I got to meet Chuck Adams in a private setting and do interviews with him for the show and things like this. And he would talk to me at dinner at different times about his Super Slam and his adventures. And I was, I can remember back then, he was on my show for 2 years. And I remember all the times I talked with him about it, thinking that I would never be able to do that, that this is crazy. You know, why would you go to hunt polar bears and why would you do this?
Yeah.
And that? It seems like, you know, just so far away and bow hunting so difficult. Well, one thing led to another. And, you know, when I got out of the Outdoor Adventure Magazine show and into the Advantage Adventure show, which was the second basically show that I did for ESPN, I got to start doing a lot of different adventurous type hunts. And of course I had to do the shotgunning we talked earlier, but right. I was a bow hunter. So I started doing black bear and then mountain goat and then brown bear, you know, and I would just start doing all these different types of adventures, you know, because I wanted this adventure thing. And this is where the adventure bow hunter thing kind of came from back in those days. Well, one thing led to another, and pretty soon I had like 14 or 15 animals. I'm like, wow.
I'm almost halfway.
So that was kind of where the light bulb went on. But I had never hunted a sheep. And even though I had done a mountain goat early on, I had never gotten a sheep. And sheep hunting, wild North American sheep are real expensive hunts. And if you're going to bow hunt, you have a real high probability of not getting one. Yep. And, or long shots, 80 yards, 90 yard shots and in real mountainous terrain. And I wanted, the other thing was, is I had filmed all these hunts for TV. All these hunts had been on ESPN. So here I am sitting with almost half of the Super Slam animals on video and thinking, man, I think I can maybe do this. And I think I maybe can get all the hunts on video. And so that was the key. And it took me 54 hunts in 13 years to get all 29 North American animals shot with a bow on video. And so, yeah, it was an incredible feat. Still, no one today has all 29 arrow impacts of all 29 animals. There used to be 27 when Chuck did it. It was the original Pope and Young 27, but they eventually added the Central Canadian Bare Ground Caribou. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I think in 2004 or something like that. And then they added the Tule elk in 2009 or 8. I'd have to look at them. I wrote another book called Adventure Bow Hunter, Quest for the Super Slam, and all the information for that is in that book. But, it was awesome. And, the cool thing about it, and you had mentioned early on that, the Pope and Young Club was what this was all about for bow hunters. Well, it really isn't. It's the Grand Slam Club Ovis is the people who monitor and register guys that get the Super Slam. The Pope and Young Club, for bow hunters, the guys who belong to the Pope and Young Club, we get our animals measured in the Pope and Young record measuring, and we put them in the Pope and Young record book. But to accomplish all 29 animals, Pope and Young Club doesn't really look at that as an accomplishment to them. For them, it's part of the Grand Slam Club Ovis Super Slam. And so that's where the Super Slam came from, which of Chuck Adams is number one. I'm number 17. So I'm the 17th bow hunter to get all of 29 with a bow. And I'm the only one so far to get all of the shots on video.
Hey, Morale, let me tell you something about Adams. I met him once at a SHOT Show in Houston. I went to shake his hand. I'd rather get my hand stuck in a 330 Conner Bear. Good luck. Hey, Chuck, how's it going? How you doing? Well, Tom, let's get to Africa's Big Five listeners. The elephant, the black rhino, the Cape buffalo, African lion, and African leopard. Now, before your asses get in the air about the rhino, Tom, describe that rhino Big Five hunt.
Well, for one, the black, there's two types of rhinoceros. There's a black rhino and the white rhino. Yep. The black rhino is very endangered, so those aren't really hunted. I mean, there's been a few hunted recently because a lot of landowners own them, and, you know, that's how you can pay for them and stuff like that. But, I mean, the white rhino is the main rhino that gets hunted today. And bow hunting-wise, rhinos, just the thickness of their skin and how they're built, muscle structure and that, they're almost impossible to kill with a bow. So really, Africa's basically outlawed bow hunting for rhinos. So they do what's called a green hunt. And a green hunt is basically tranquilizing the rhino by using a bow with an arrow that's tipped with a syringe, heavy-duty syringe, that has a tranquilizer drug in it. And so what happens is you'll go to a place where the landowner needs to have a rhino tranquilized for a certain reason, maybe to get antibiotics to, or maybe to put radio tracking collars on them because of poaching, not collars, but they implant these devices. And so once that's all put together, with the aid of a veterinarian, you go out and you actually hunt for that one rhino. There might be 200 rhinos on this place, but you hunt for that one rhino that they need to dart, and then you shoot that. And then when it falls asleep, you measure the horn, and then you can have a reproduction mount made and your picture taken next to it. The veterinarian does all the work, the antibiotics, drugs, whatever, radio tracker, and then they wake up the rhino and he runs off into the woods. So it's pretty cool.
Well, Tom, back to Super Salmon listeners, this is really, I mean, physically taxing. I mean, I remember reading the segment on your Rocky Mountain Bighorn. I was short of breath, Tom, and I had shin splints. I mean, describing that hunt. Now, I've had my share of international travel and some, it's not like questionable areas like Costa Rica on the Nicaraguan border, tarpon fishing, et cetera, an infinitum. You travel worldwide. Your diciest situation where you said to yourself, Miranda, what the hell did I get myself into? Go.
Oh, my goodness. Well, when I was doing my second lion hunt in Mozambique, I got sick in camp in the Nyasa Reserve, and we decided that I needed to go to the hospital. And on the drive to the hospital, which was a three-day drive to the hospital, we got caught in an ambush.
What?
And I took a bullet through the door, over my foot, into the transmission cowling, one behind me in the seat, and it killed a guy on the back of our truck, and there were a lot of other people that were shot in that ambush. That was as close as I came to actually dying, and it was being shot by somebody in an ambush. So that was pretty crazy. I've had some other hunting type things that, you know, like falling down the mountainside and almost falling off the cliff and different things like that. But, you know, that, as far as somebody actually shooting at me and bullets actually going through the car into the seat behind me, I mean, I was really, and we're driving 60 miles an hour down the highway when these, you know, there was a bus behind us that two people got killed in, and it was crazy. It was just a crazy thing. And it's actually on the video I did. I mean,
good
my
God.
Lion hunt I was actually documenting with a little GoPro when we drove into it. And so I've got the actual thing on video. It's pretty crazy.
Whoa, Miranda, there but for the grace of God go you. Now listen, to the animals themselves, yeah, elephant, Nashua, whatever, brown bear, polar bears, I guess, have no fear of humans. They're meat eaters, so and there you have it. The trickiest situation you've been in with a big game animal on a hunt.
Well, I've been charged by brown bears, and I mean, you know, it's a scary scenario. I mean, do you flee or do you hold your ground? I mean, you know, all those things go through your mind. And elephants especially, I mean, I ran from many elephants, mostly females, you know, they smell you and then they try to find you. And even if you've got a good place, you can't climb a tree and get away from them. They can knock over a 12-inch diameter tree, no problem. So, yeah, I mean, but I've been very careful. I mean, when you're bow hunting, it's a lot different than a lot of these guys that take these rifles and walk up to 12 feet of an elephant and shoot it in the head. I mean, you've got to have the perfect situation. You've got to have some sort of a barrier. Maybe it's a creek and you're on one side and the animal's on the other. It may not forcibly keep him from coming to you, but it's just a dividing line there that he probably won't cross, you know. And when I shot my elephant, for example, I shot him up in the rocks, and I did an animal damage complaint elephant. So this was an elephant that was doing damage to a local village, and so it wasn't just a trophy hunt for an elephant. It was an actual, this animal was going to be taken out of the herd somehow, some way. And I was blessed because of my career and being known as a bow hunter that they were allowed me to take it with a bow. So that was pretty cool. And it was a hard hunt. I mean, it was 12 days of hiking and walking 15, 20 kilometers a day. I mean, it's a hard hunt.
Tom, before I let you go, two things. One, I'll get to the book, how people can get it. This is Master Trappers. Tom Miranda honors the Master Trappers. Tom, muskox seemed like a pretty badass critter. Just the polar bear, too. Just the environment there. I mean, you're hunting in what, single digits below zero conditions?
Yeah, I mean, it's 40 below zero when you're up there hunting. I mean,
yo!
It's very, very cold. Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different world. You know, the hunts aren't really that difficult. I mean, you got to find the polar bears. There's a lot of polar bears, even though they're on the threatened list now. When I shot my polar bear, it was right on the cusp of when they were looking at the global warming and all that stuff. Right. That was right when Obama was taking over and all that. I shot mine in 2007. Okay. And so I was able to bring my polar bear back. But, you know, in the muskox, there's a lot of muskox in the Inuit, you know, sustenance hunt with for muskox. So, you know, they're not hard to hunt, but it's the weather, it's the conditions, right. It's the, you know, it's not only the climate, but just the, you know, the people and everything about the Inuits and how they live. And, you know, when you go up there, they'll build, you know, they're real accommodating people. And like, we've built igloos before and stayed in igloos. And,
wow.
You know, rode on the dog sleds and all the different things that they do. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, when you're crossing the sea ice, and you hear it cracking and cracking and cracking. We're talking about salt water that's froze over 12 feet thick. You know what I mean? That's crazy.
In your, you mentioned earlier in the program, my heart stopped a little bit. You said when you retire from TV, I don't see that happening, Miranda. But will you ever get back to your trapping roots? Do you see it coming full circle, brother?
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that I really that may be the demise of my TV career. I mean, I'm always going to do the seminars, and you know, I do a lot of speaking engagements,
right.
And you know, my videos will always be out there, and I'll be doing guest appearances on shows and stuff like that. But you know, it's not going to happen anytime soon. But eventually, I would like to get back on the trap line. And I've been I have a bow camp in Texas. It's in an area where they could. Good trapping and good trappers, and I'm thinking about maybe going to Texas and and setting up a trap line there and kind of getting back into it a little bit, because I have missed it. And I coming full circle, I think, is an important step in life, you know.
Sure. Tom, well, thanks for joining us on Rack and Fin Radio. Listeners, Tom Miranda's book is Master Trappers. Tom Miranda honors the Master Trappers, and as he explained, just for the logistics, couldn't mention everyone in there who's influenced him in one way or another on the trap line. Listeners, the book is worth every penny of the $54.95 plus shipping. You cannot put it down. It's a coffee table book. I'm on my third read. It's like going to a movie, Miranda, where you miss something here and there. It's just the knowledge in here, Tom, the work you put into it opened my eyes to a lot of things about the history of trapping and the people involved that you never would have believed was actually true. You know, so it's a great work, Tom. How do people get the book?
Well, you can go, there's several places to get it, but if you wanted to get a signed copy from me, you can go to TomMiranda.com, TomMiranda.com. And, the books are in there on my store, and there's a lot of other information in there about my bow hunting career and the animals I've taken, and a lot of cool stuff on there, TomMiranda.com.
Listen, it's Tom, it's been a pleasure, honor having you on. Hopefully we'll meet someday, somewhere down the line. Hopefully not at your house, so I don't want your property value to go down. But maybe in the field somewhere. Best of the family, Tommy. Take care.
Take care, Tom. Thank you.
See you, brother. Tom Miranda. Just a great guy. Just a great guy. And I've seen him at some shows. Never approach him, but just watching him with people. I mean, just fantastic. Hey, man. Whew. Hey, up against the break. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
If you're wondering what to do with your money in these unusual economic times, or if you have questions about retirement planning, IRAs, 401ks, or taxes, then listen to The Heart of Your Money, Saturday morning at 8 on WPG, featuring author and financial expert Joe Yakovich. The Heart of Your Money will focus on you, your family, and your financial portfolio. The Heart of Your Money with Joe Yakovich, Saturday morning at 8 on WPG, Talk Radio 95.5.
If you've been diagnosed with breast or gynecologic cancer, your cancer journey should not be traveled alone. You need an entire team by your side. The Women's Cancer Program at MD Anderson Cancer Center at Cooper, the first of its kind in the region, takes a personalized team approach to cancer care. Because no two women and no two women's cancer experience are the same. At MD Anderson at Cooper, no one fights cancer alone. To find out how, call 855-MDA-COOPER.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Okay, going to end the program. It's oxymoronic on a sad but yet honorable note in that he passed a few days ago. Fred Space from Space Farms up there in Beamerville in Sussex County. Man was an icon, not only in the Northlands, but throughout the South. I met people up at Space Farms that were from Cumberland County, from Salem County. It was just an incredible wildlife zoo and museum. And Fred Space, when he passed, he was 92 years of age. And I would say 92 years young, because the man did not stop. And he was a member of the Fish and Game Council back in the 60s, 70s, what have you. And one of the great outdoorsmen who helped build the trapping, the hunting, the fishing community in New Jersey. Again, not only North, but Central and South as well. I was saddened, but hey, it's inevitable. We all are going to go down that path. But the man was just one. Last time I saw Mr. Space was probably 4 or 5 years ago. There he was at the farm, just walking around, carrying stuff, working. I would greet him. He said, "Hey, Tom, how's?" And off he went. And just we chatted for a few minutes. But he was just a nonstop, old school, hardworking individual. Now, a fairly frequent guest on Rack and Fin Radio is Assemblyman Parker Space, Republican 24th District up there in Sussex County. Fred Space was his dad, or his pop, as everyone seemed to call him. And I remember hearing that all the years. And I just want Parker to just relate about his dad. Again, one of the icons in New Jersey. Now, we're a very small state, fifth smallest, as a matter of fact. Fred Space was known everywhere. Parker, it's my condolences for me and my lovely Dee Marie on the passing of your dad. He was one remarkable man.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on. Yes, he was. Like you said, he 92 years. He lived a good life, and he dedicated so much of his life into what he truly believed in. You know, a couple things with, you know, the farm. He loved being a sportsman. He loved to hunt and fish and trap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the years on the Fish and Game Council and, you know, endless meetings going to around the state.
Right.
Trying to advocate for our lifestyle, which I say, you know, the sportsman's, the outdoorsman's lifestyle. And that was what his true love was. And it wasn't just, you know, hunting and trapping and fishing here in New Jersey. He loved to go, you know, I spent trips in Colorado with him, or, mm-hmm. or Montana or Wyoming. He's been to Alaska, you know, up through Canada. He just truly did what he loved to do, and that's advocate for the sporting community.
And Parker, he loved to educate people about wildlife ecology. He was just an amazing man. I mean, he would have crowds around him sometimes. I saw him once by the snake pit and then by the cage where Goliath was. This is Goliath was about, I guess he was a Kodiak brown bear, about 2,000 pounds, maybe a little heavier. God, or I don't know, maybe 15 feet. That was a huge, except for an elephant, that was the biggest animal I've ever seen. And your dad, this sounds weird, had like a French, almost a loving relationship with this bear who treated him as if he was like vice versa. He was one of his own. And people would say, "Oh my God, look at that old man with that bear." And yet your dad was just right there and explaining everything about bears and their part in the ecosystem.
Oh, he loved Goliath. Yeah, it was the biggest, you know, bear ever recorded in captivity. You know, Guinness Book World Record, Ripley's, believe it or not. 2,000 pounds and 12 feet tall. And the ironic thing is that, yes, he loved that bear. And people today still come in and look at it and say,
yeah.
When I was a kid, I remember when that bear was alive.
Yeah.
And we're having on Sunday my dad's viewing part of the funeral is going to be right at the main building at Space Farms, and his casket is going to be right in front of Goliath, and Goliath is going to be standing over top of him.
Well, how fitting.
Watching him.
How fitting. Parker, your dad also was a fairly prolific writer. I remember an article in the older issues of New Jersey Outdoors, again, back when it was 10 cents, and black and white, and just full of information, not only hunting, fishing, trapping, whatever, but nature, arbor stuff, you know, trees and what have you, habitat. And I remember one article your dad had about raising a bear cub that was orphaned or something like that, and how he got him potty trained, you know, in a litter box and stuff. It was absolutely fascinating. I assume that being a bear was like, oh, but your dad was see all do all, man.
Yep. And the good and the interesting, there were a couple of things. One with the knowledge that he had, and he realized that every generation that passes, history is lost. So he did a very good job of writing down history the way he remembered it through his lifetime, or even, you know, that he was told by his great-grandfather. So we would be able to have, you know, kind of know what, where we came from as a space family, or, you know, what he, you know, decided, you know, should be written down. And it's, like I said, it's a sort of a history teacher for us also. And, but even with this last pandemic, I guess we would call it, you know, like last springtime when we couldn't open up the zoo, we were doing the FaceTime lives every day, just trying to like keep our customers, you know, entertained. So when we could open up, we could actually get the people to come back to the zoo. And it's fortunate for that, that, you know, every day we were doing them and my dad was part of it. So we have so much of that history now, you know, saved, which we wouldn't have.
I tell you, Parker, that'll make a hell of a film or a book. My God, when you think about it, the changes in New Jersey that your dad seen and observed and was a part of. And I'm sure he would not be happy with what he's seeing these days.
Oh, no, no. He's right on board with the rest of us, you know. And, but now, like you said, he was a true teacher, you know, through time, as you say, with either, you know, when he was younger, slinging rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
To, you know, in the last couple of years where he was pretty, he got around, worked every day, but he had to have a walker. So quite often he would come into the zoo, into the main building, and here'd be, you know, three or four, five, six kids, you know, just young kids. And he'd be holding a feather, teaching them about a bird feather or something simple, you know, in life. And but he always loved to teach people.
Parker, it just came to me, and I'll let you go. We're up against the end of the program here. But this was, I would say, late 80s, perhaps early 90s. I'm walking up, and he's by way of in the back. You had, I guess, didn't you have jaguars there?
Yep, still have them.
You still have them, and I remember in South America hearing them, in Costa Rica hearing them at night with the But also near there were bison. I've never seen a bison. And your dad was there feeding or whatever. And I walked up, he said, "Do you know what this is?" I said, "That's one hell of a huge animal." And your dad said, "Well, he's not even half grown yet." I said, "My God." And he went on to explain, you know, how big the bison. I never really paid much attention to him, you know. And I mean, he was just a wealth of knowledge, it seemed, of every critter within the confines of space farms.
Mm-hmm.
He just loved it. He just absolutely loved it. Well, Parker, our condolences and the best wishes to the family. Listeners, the passing of Fred Space, his dad. Not yet. Low in Trenton, Parker. I don't know how you survived. God bless you. Well, you're tough. You're a space. And just an icon and for the New Jersey outdoors. Is a wonderful man, an educator, writer, and just loved what he did every day of his life. And Parker, how's your mom?
Good. She's hanging in there.
Yeah. We'll give her our regards as well, will you, bud?
I will. Thank you much.
Parker, you take care. Thank you very much. Again, our condolences. Listeners, Fred Space, incredible man, big part of New Jersey's outdoor scene. Parker, we'll see you.
All right. Thank you.
That'll do for this week on Rack and Fin Radio. Sorry to end on a downer note, but it wasn't a downer in that Fred, again, we were going to go down that path some sooner, some later, was just a remarkable, remarkable individual. I mean, my God, can he just, it was a wealth of knowledge. Kids, he was like the Pied Piper of wildlife. The children at space farms, he'd gather around them, even up into the teenage years. He knew so much, and he always was willing to share it. That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders. And check it out. Master Trappers. Tom Miranda honors the Master Trappers. What a book, a tome, a treatise. This is it. Give you some history on the outdoors, the forming of America. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio. 95.5.